Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk hosts as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. We are coming up very close to the start of this year's NFL draft. We'll get you a lot of draft coverage. Today, we're going to do the draft a little bit different. So we have examined a lot of the key mock drafts, and we have tallied up all the players. Joshua Simmons is one of those players. Josh Connerly is one of those players. Walter Nolan on the defensive line is one of those players. We are going to head to Ohio State, Tennessee, Oregon, Ole Miss to take a closer look at some of the players who have been projected to play for the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll do that throughout the course of the show today. We'll get to the Royals here coming up in a little bit. But before we do any of that, I want to remind you guys of a couple of things. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. And number two, I need you guys to tell one friend to check out the show. It'd be great if you guys told two people, but you know what? Beggars will not be choosers. I would appreciate if you guys just told one person to check out the show as we get you guys ready for the NFL draft. All right. This is how I would like to start today's show. Do you guys remember when you were kids, or maybe your kid does this now, that you will be trying to talk to a kid and that child will put their fingers in their ear and start to make noise because they don't want to hear anything you are talking about? La, 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 la. They start to make noise. That's how I am today about the Kansas City Royals. I do not care how they won yesterday. Sure, it was not pretty yesterday. And if you want to poke holes in their win that went to the 11th inning against the Colorado Rockies, you can do that on your own time. Not in this house. That is not what I will participate in. I don't care how the Royals do it against the Rockies. I don't. But what I do know is the Royals need to win this series by any means necessary, and they got the first one. You got to figure out a way to win one game on either Wednesday or Thursday, and you got Reagan's going up on Thursday, and today the pitcher for the Colorado Rockies has an 8 ERA. I don't care how. All I want you to do is finish the job. I don't want this to be a series like some of the other ones that we've seen. You win the first, you lose the second, you got an important rubber game, you then drop it, and we're sitting here and we're like, how in the world did you lose a series to the Colorado Rockies? I don't want it. I don't care how they won yesterday. I don't care if it was pretty. I don't care if you're unhappy. I don't care if you turned it off early because the Royals have frustrated you. I don't want to hear it. I only want to hear that they did what they were supposed to do against the Colorado Rockies, and that is simple. That is win by any means necessary. We'll get to Patrick Mahomes coming up momentarily. Patrick Mahomes met with the media for the first time since the Super Bowl loss back in February against the Philadelphia Eagles. But you guys know the rules. If we lead the show with the Kansas City Royals, that can only mean one thing. Hit me, Rob.
We're where you want to be. Baseball with the Royals. If you want to be
having a great time.
Carrying today's random Royals lineup takes us back to the year 2021. If you'll remember, the Royals got off to a red-hot start that season following the COVID year before falling off. On this date in Royals history, the Royals beat the Tigers 6-2 to move to 11-7. Here was your lineup for the day. Leading off at second base, Whit Merrifield.
Okay.
Batting second, the first baseman, Carlos Santana.
Okay.
Batting third, the catcher, Salvador Perez. Batting fourth, the right fielder, Jorge Soler.
I got a feeling this is about to take a wild turn.
Batting fifth, the designated hitter, Ryan O'Hearn.
How did I know?
Batting sixth, the third baseman, Hunter Dozier. Batting seventh, in left field, Andrew Benintendi.
I remember him.
Batting eighth, in center field, Michael A. Taylor. And batting ninth, the shortstop, Nicky Lopez. The Royals beat the Tigers on this date 6-2, but behind 5 2/3 strong from Mike Minor as the Royals beat Casey Mize and the Detroit Tigers.
Let me play for you guys what Patrick Mahomes had to say earlier today as he met with the media. This is the first time that he's met with the media since the Chiefs lost the Super Bowl to the Philadelphia Eagles. This was the most important and intriguing thing that I thought he had to say today, and something that, admittedly, I had not thought of from this perspective. Patrick Mahomes is talking about the continuity in the wide receiver room. That is not something that this offense has had a lot over the last half decade or so.
I mean, obviously everything looks great right now. I mean, getting the guys back healthy as far as Rashee and having Hollywood fully healthy and Xavier in year two, I think the offense has a chance to be really, really good. It's just about keeping building. I'm excited to kind of have these guys again, just with we've had a lot of turnover in the receiving room, and it seems like the core group will be back in its entirety. So the goal is to try to build on it and get even better and try to get back to some of the explosive passing plays that we've done in years past.
I think that's a really, really important part of this team, and maybe more specifically this wide receiver room. I think the Chiefs' theme this offseason has been continuity. The Chiefs didn't really stray too far outside of the nest. Everything that the Chiefs wanted was in-house, and they simply had to go out and they had to retain those players. Now, they didn't have an internal option for left tackle. They went out to go get that with Jalen Moore and signed him to a 2-year deal. But when it came to left guard and moving on from Joe Tooney, they had an in-house option with Kingsley Suamataia and Mike Caliendo. When you look on the defensive side, where have they thought for the most part to go? It has been about keeping their own players and keeping that continuity. I hadn't really thought about it from this perspective. There haven't been a lot of years since the Tyreek Hill trade where the Chiefs have brought back their number one wide receiver or their number one wide receiver was healthy the next year. Sure, 2 years ago, Rashee Rice was your number one wide receiver. He then got injured. You had to have a new number one wide receiver. You had Juju, then Juju was gone. You had DeAndre Hopkins, then DeAndre Hopkins was gone. You added Hollywood Brown and expected him to be a major piece of what you were doing offensively. He then got hurt in free agency. So for this team, that continuity, I think, is really, really important to this team. And Rob, honestly, it's not something that I really thought about with this team.
I honestly was thinking about this when he said that. When was the last time the Chiefs had that? I don't know they've had that in a long time. Like, with the three major pieces being guys who are coming back. Because we're going into last year, Hollywood Brown was a new piece. Xavier Worthy was a new piece. The year before that, Rashee Rice was a focal point of the offense. He was a new piece. The year before that was the Tyreek Hill trade. The whole room was new. Before that, there was Tyreek Hill. They lost Sammy Watt. Like, I wonder when the last time the Chiefs had that level of continuity. Because it feels like, and the draft made me think of this, it feels like every year around draft time, me and you find ourselves arguing about wide receiver. It's a tale as old as time on this show. We argue about wide receiver in April because the Chiefs always seem to be needing a new one, and there's a lack of continuity in the room. Me and you are still kind of disagreeing on wide receiver, but 1, 2, and 3 are set in stone, and I hope what we heard about last year in St. Joe, more dynamic, more explosive, more deep shots, all that stuff before the injury bug hit is something that could actually happen to this team, because there's been one constant me of you had said this offseason. I want Patrick Mahomes to look like Patrick Mahomes again, and that means being more explosive, and hopefully that continuity leads to that.
Usually what happens with the wide receiver room is they're usually trying to search something to make up for what they've lost. When you lose Juju Smith-Schuster in free agency, you go out and you try to make a move to replace him. When you lose Tyreek Hill, you go sign MVS to a deal. This is the first time that in all of their skill position rooms, they are adding to what they already have and not taking away. When we're talking about running back, you have Isaiah Pacheco, you have Kareem Hunt. We are now talking about them adding a running back into the mix. You look at tight end. Travis Kelce is going to be back. Noah Gray is also going to be back. Jarrett Wiley should be back from injury at some point this season. If you go get a tight end, it is building on what you already have at the position. If you look at their wide receiver room from last year and what we expected it to be, Rashee Rice should play at some point this season. Xavier Worthy had a very solid rookie year. You also are bringing back Hollywood Brown. You also got Nico Romeo. So you are bringing in a lot of continuity on the offense, and you should take a step forward. And you are a couple days away from adding, in my opinion, certainly to that running back room. And then we'll see if they go out there and they add a wide receiver or two to try to throw into the mix. Let's take a quick break here. Coming up, we'll talk about the NFL draft. I've been having a thought about the top five of the draft. I'll share it with you next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we are going to head to Ole Miss. We are going to head around the country to kind of take a closer look at some of the players who have been mocked to the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's talk national NFL draft, and then we'll focus in on the Chiefs coming up momentarily. So at this point, I believe that you guys know the draft order, but if you don't, let me inform you. Tennessee has the number one overall pick. Cleveland has the number two pick. The Giants, number three. New England, number four. And Jacksonville, number five. Now, we think that we have a pretty clear picture of who some of these selections are going to be. Cam Ward, number one overall. Travis Hunter, number two overall. Abdul Carter, number three overall to the New York Giants. And that's where things get interesting. Now, every person that mocks the NFL draft has Will Campbell going to the New England Patriots. He is a very talented offensive lineman from LSU. But if you remember the audio clip that we played yesterday from Todd McShay, he's not super high on Will Campbell. Here's what he said.
People in the other draft rooms are like, pew, 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 yes, yes.
Right.
Because, yeah, go ahead, take Tet. Take Will Campbell. Because right. I'm talking to teams, and they don't – like, Tet and Will aren't sniffing the very top where we've got other guys. Obviously, Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter. But now we got a quarterback who's in not a great quarterback class that no one else is really worried about. Now we've got a wide receiver in not a great wide receiver class that nobody else is really worried where he goes. Okay? Now we got an offensive tackle and a tackle class, I told you, talking to NFL people, fifth or sixth offensive tackle a year ago. Okay? Quarterback would have been fifth or sixth last year. Offensive tackle would have been fifth or sixth last year. Wide receiver would have been sixth last year.
Will Campbell last season would have been the fourth or fifth offensive lineman that came off of the board. So if you were looking at last season, the fifth offensive lineman came off the board at 18. We're now talking about using the fourth overall pick to draft that player. That seems like a problem to me. This is my question. What is the argument against taking Ashton Jeanty at four if you're New England? Because I can make a pretty strong argument in taking him with the number four overall pick. Look at the weapons New England has. This is their skill positions. Ramondre Stevenson, Antonio Gibson. At wide receiver, they overpaid for Stephon Diggs, who is now playing for his third team in three seasons and is coming off a significant leg injury. You got DeMario Douglas, Kayshon Boutte, and Hunter Henry. Those are the offensive weapons that you have decided to put around your potential franchise quarterback in Drake May. Now, I know running back value, positional value, you don't want to take a running back that high, but for teams that take a running back in the area that I'm talking about, I mean, it usually kind of works out. So these are the last five running backs who have been selected in the top 10. Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, and Leonard Fournette. That's the five. I mean, drafting Jahmyr Gibbs with the fourth overall pick in this year's draft class doesn't sound like that bad of an option to me. Drafting Christian McCaffrey in this year's draft class doesn't seem that bad to me. If you want to go back one more, Ezekiel Elliott was a top five pick. If you drafted Ezekiel Elliott with the fourth overall pick and you're New England, is that a bad thing to pair with your quarterback? I understand the argument about positional value, and for the most part, I am on you guys' side. But I do think that we overthink it a little bit. Just draft a player that you think moves the needle for your team and a player that you think can help. And you are not telling me that you would draft Amarius Mims with the fourth overall pick when he went 18 last year to the Cincinnati Bengals. Not when you got a chance to get maybe the best skill position player in this year's draft class. This is where I think we go a little bit overboard on running back and trying to devalue their position. We're talking about a team last year in the New England Patriots that ran it 446 times. They gave Ramondre Stevenson 200 carries last year, and they threw it to him 50 times. He's the most important player in your offense. Is that a bad thing to now make that Ashton Jeanty, who was the best college running back we've seen since Reggie Bush? I don't think that's a bad option if you're the New England Patriots. I don't know why in every single one of these mocks they have them taking who would have been the 19th, 21st overall pick last year instead of taking arguably the best skill position player in this draft in Ashton Jeanty. I think we are now going a little bit too overboard with positional value, especially in a draft class in which we don't think that it's incredibly strong. In a draft that we don't think there's a lot of stars or high-end players, the Patriots got a chance to take one of those high-end players, then take him at four. I would take Ashton Jeanty if I'm the New England Patriots. If you're trying to give your quarterback the best possible options, you got to really sell me on why Ashton Jeanty for their offense is not the best possible option.
I don't want to have the positional value argument because we both know the positional value. Ginty at four is nonsense for positional value. But do you know what I think we also overthink? Best player available. Every GM will tell you they want the best player available in their pre-draft press conference. Do we think Ginty's the fourth best player in this draft? I don't. And I think Ginty's good. I know I hate running back, but Ginty's a good player. I don't think he is the fourth best player in the draft, period.
Who do you think it is?
I actually think the answer is either Mason Graham or Armon Mimbo.
Okay.
In a weird twist of fate, I'm going to stand back here and tell you that the Missouri tackle is the best tackle in the draft. He's an athletic freak.
But you and I both know that if Mimbo was in last year's draft class, he'd be like the 23rd overall pick last year.
I would also say that
and now we're advocating to take that player at four for this upcoming year. So that's why I think we are having these arguments about positional value, but we're also not arguing, wait, you're telling me to take who I believe is a mid-round prospect using a top five pick instead of a player where I think that Ashton Ginty in most draft classes, in most, would be the best running back on the board. I think I'd rather have the best running back in a draft class than have in this year's draft class the best offensive lineman.
I also think it's a little unfair to take it when you compare it to previous draft classes. You have to take each draft in its own vacuum. You really do. And you know what this draft has? A lot of depth at what position, Carrington? Running back. If you take Mimbo at four, he's what I think is the best tackle in the draft. I don't think Will Campbell's better than Mimbo. If you take Mimbo at four and at 36 or whatever your second round pick is, you take Omarion Hampton, Travion Henderson, Wishon Judkins, pick one of the running backs the Chiefs have talked about, Dylan Sampson. Are you better or worse than Ginty and a tackle at 36? I think that's the conversation. It's not a slap in Ginty's face to say, hey, Ginty, you're a 89 in Madden, but I can get an 82 in Madden in the second round. There's a much larger gap at offensive line, defensive line, corner at pick four than there is running back. And maybe I'm just explaining positional value in a different way, and that's fine. But I think in this draft, you got to take each draft in a vacuum. Running back is so deep. Don't worry about where offensive lineman number one would go in last year's draft. Take him where he fits in this year's draft.
But this is where I think that we've gone a little bit too overboard. Someone on the text line says, taking a running back in the first round is always stupid. There isn't enough of a difference between RB1 and 15 running back. Sure, the running back might be good, but you don't win anything, so who cares? We watch the NFL. You're telling me that you don't notice a difference on Sundays and having Jahmyr Gibbs and having Chase Brown as your running back? There's not a difference between those two backs. The Chiefs have Isaiah Pacheco. There's not a noticeable difference in having Isaiah Pacheco and Josh Jacobs on your team. There's not a noticeable difference in the quality of player that you are getting between those two. We're not talking about you think that Ashton Ginty is a good prospect. I think he is the best prospect at it. And usually, the running back that we think is the best running back prospect normally turns out to be really, really good in the National Football League. We don't normally, that's not really a position group that we miss a whole lot on if you think that guy is special. Rob, you and I watch a lot of college football. We thought Ezekiel Elliott was going to be really good in the league. He turned out to be really good. Christian McCaffrey, you just knew that he was going to be a special player. He turned out to be a special player. Bijan Robinson, can't miss prospect out of Texas. Last year, he was third in the NFL in rushing and averaged 5 yards a carry. I think that's what Ashton Ginty is. That's who I think he is. I think he is a 1,200-yard rusher for next year, a 1,300-yard rusher. And for a team that had no pop, no sizzle offensively, no nothing last year, I don't think that taking the very talented running back is a bad positional value argument. If you're telling me that you think this is a generational draft class, the way that Mike Renner did, and you and I both think that about this draft class, you got to take in a generational draft class, there is one running back that is still even more generational than that. Even more special. Has separated himself more than all of those players. Just throwing that out there. I would seriously consider I would very seriously consider taking him with the number 4 overall pick, especially if You're talking about a player in Will Campbell who a lot of people think projects better to be a guard. You're taking the now left and right guard with the fourth overall pick? I can't do it. That's not the way I would build my team. Not at all. It's not the way I would build my team. I'm taking the generational running back. I'm taking the best running back in this year's draft class. I think the Ginty's going to go top 10. We're just really trying to figure out the range in which he could potentially go. I think it's somewhere probably between 5 and 8 in this class. I don't think the Patriots are going to take him. And if they do, it's just going to be a shock. I haven't seen anybody mock him to the New England Patriots. It seems like Ashton Ginty's zone is probably somewhere between 5 and probably the lowest he is going to go in 10. I think that Ben Johnson, who had David Montgomery, who had Jahmyr Gibbs, is going to try to create that same dynamic with the offense with Caleb Williams. I think 10 is as low as we're talking about Ashton Ginty going. So we're going to do something pretty cool today. We are going to head around college football and take a closer look at some of the prospects that could potentially be drafted by the Chiefs in round one. We're going to take our first stop for the day and be joined by Jake Thompson, who covers Ole Miss for On3 Sports, to take a closer look at Walter Nolan and Trey Amos, two very talented defensive players. Jake, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely. Let's start with this, because I've never asked somebody this before. What is it like to cover Lane Kiffin day in, day out?
Well, as somebody who, obviously, being down here, was very familiar with him with his time at Alabama and Tennessee, and then obviously over to Southern Cal, and just kind of that persona and that character, and then obviously getting spoofed by a few comedy people. He was that larger-than-life college coach that, you know, Ole Miss never really had that kind of guy. They never had that like Nick Saban or Lightning Rod guy. And then, you know, December 2019, all of a sudden Ole Miss AD Keith Carter pulls the trigger and brings Lane Kiffin to us. And, you know, it's been surreal to kind of be here and watch how he was when he started coming here from Boca and FAU to where he is now 6 years. You know, this will be his sixth year this fall at Ole Miss. And now Ole Miss is the answer to the trivia question of what is Lane Kiffin's longest tenure coaching job, you know, which nobody I think saw coming. So it's been fun, and there's not really a dull day covering him, but it is interesting how we've all kind of get put in the spotlight of college football now.
I want to ask you about Walter Nolan. We'll do that coming up in a bit, but I have to get your thoughts on Jackson Dart. Do you see him as a quality starter, a potential franchise quarterback in the league?
You know, I do, and of course, you know, maybe that's because I'm a little biased just having covered him and been around him, seeing him day to day and seeing what he can do. And, you know, those college quarterbacks, it's always so hit or miss, especially like the big names. Some make it and some pan out, and then it's the ones you get taken late Saturday or you know, late Friday that shine better than the guys that get taken on Thursday. But I do feel like he has the tools to make it, and, you know, it's nice to kind of have to keep an eye on the top 10 again for an Ole Miss player, especially quarterback. I mean, Ole Miss hadn't had that since Eli, you know, 22 years ago. But I think whoever takes him, and I know he's been floated as high as the third pick to the Giants to, you know, I think 40th or, you know, early Friday, I think the team's going to make a nice selection there. And it'll be fun to see the positioning and what teams do to try to get him and how they got him. That'll be the story that's most interesting.
If I had to guess, I think he's going to be a first-round pick. This seems like a move for the New Orleans Saints to me. I know there's been a lot of buzz about them going to get Shedeur Sanders. I could see a scenario in which maybe the Saints go best player available at 9, and then they're aggressive in trying to trade back into the first round to try to get Jackson Dart somewhere in that 20 to 25 range.
You know, as a New Orleans Saints fan, that's nice to hear that that's still kind of a possibility. You know, that's kind of the strategy that I've seen a lot of. Yeah, he's at 9, but the Saints do have more pressing needs, you know, especially defense and now offensive line with the guy with Ramchick retiring. But, you know, I then see them trading up late Thursday night, tomorrow night, or first thing Friday to higher up to better spot and get Dart. I think that's the move. If he goes number 9 or somewhere in the top 10, that'll be great and kind of even more surprising to me.
I'm reading right now his NFL draft page on NFL.com. They have his NFL comparison as Gardner Minshew. Certainly not what you want for a first or second round pick. You watched every snap of his college career. When you see him play, who do you see? Who do you think his NFL comparison is?
You know, it's tough. I always seem to do that poorly in terms of comps, but I do think he has more tools to succeed. You know, and Gardner Minshew, he's a high school alum of mine. We both went to the same high school, so I love him. But he's, I think Dart's got more of a ceiling than Gardner, and I know Gardner's been put in some tough situations, you know, in his career. But, you know, I don't know what the best comp is because I've seen so many too, and it's hard for me to kind of nail. I know he likes to model himself after Jalen Hurts. I might see that a little bit, especially in the toughness, you know, in the running game especially. So if I had to kind of put a marker on one, I'd say maybe Jalen Hurts just because he's kind of forced that issue and that narrative.
Right now, we're talking to Jake Thompson, just getting a closer look at Ole Miss and some of the prospects that they have. They have a couple that have been mocked to the Chiefs. Walter Nolan is one, and Trey Amos at corner is one. Let's start with Walter Nolan. What is it about you like? What is it about him that you like as an NFL prospect?
You know, when he transferred in from A&M, it was obviously the key get for Kiffin in last year's transfer cycle in December of, 2023. To regroup and rebuild, and they got him, and he was nothing but as advertised. He was a monster up front. You know, he helped combine for 14 tackles for loss. Just, you know, he really kind of dictated and allowed teammates to thrive in the statistical category because teams would plan against him, leading to other having to run guys into other parts of that top offensive Ole Miss defensive line with Jared Ivey, McGee's, Princely. But Nolan, I think, can thrive. He's just got to get in the right defensive system. And I've loved seeing him with the Chiefs. Obviously, they know what success is, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and they love them some SEC defensive players. So I think that would be a tremendous fit, and I think they'd know how to use him at his utmost potential.
Do you see him as somebody who has the ability to get to the quarterback at the next level, or do you think he's primarily somebody who's going to be used to stop the run?
I could see it. I think initially he'll be best at stopping the run because I just think they're going to kind of double team him in terms of preventing that rush. But he's somebody that, at least here under Randall Joyner, the defensive line coach, and Pete Golding, the defense coordinator, he developed so much in just a short amount of time that he was here that I feel like if he gets under the right, tutelage or right mentor, or right coach, they can continue that development. I could see him becoming that guy that's living in the backfield sooner than later.
He seems like one of those players, and I think this happens every year toward the back half of the first round. You could tell me that Nolan goes 25 overall. You could tell me that he goes 55 overall. Just once you kind of get to that, like, pick 27, close to the back half of the first round, it feels like anything is possible.
Yeah, no, and, ever since – even when the season ended at the Gator Bowl and draft prep and, we started focusing on draft talk, Nolan had always been kind of the first Ole Miss guy to go off the board. We felt he was that first-round guy. Dart's, stock kind of up and down and then a little bit down at the end of the season with Ole Miss's success and then struggles, not making the playoffs, and that's just how that goes. The quarterback's tied to the team's success. So Nolan was kind of that guy that everybody thought, okay, he'll go that Thursday night. And then Dart just had this tremendous draft process showing at Mobile. And then the draft and the combine and pro day here, he just kind of overtook Walter. But I still see Walter as a first-round guy. And, yeah, mid to late tomorrow night, it wouldn't surprise me wherever he goes.
Right now, we're talking to Jake Thompson for a couple more minutes. He covers Ole Miss. They have a couple of players who have been mocked to the Chiefs. One is the defensive tackle, Walter Nolan. Another one is Trey Amos. He plays in the secondary. Tell us a little bit more about Trey. Is he a guy that you think is worthy of a first-round pick?
Yeah, he was also kind of the rumblings of would he break through to Thursday in that first round or would he be kind of a high Friday second round guy? He always was kind of right at that bubble, that borderline. But for Ole Miss, he was probably the best get after Nolan in terms of the defensive side of the ball, getting him to transfer over from Alabama. The Ole Miss secondary has been always kind of a little questionable, marquee, so to speak, especially with depth and if you get one guy injured. But Amos came in and he just made that position in that room so much better and showed constantly flashes of what he could do. And I strongly think he's got the skill set, the body type, everything to succeed and continue that to the NFL level. And I wouldn't be surprised either if he snuck in, towards the end last night or immediately come Friday night.
Do you think he's somebody that's better suited for the inside or the outside?
I think he played well on the outside. I like him on the outside. I didn't see much of him here on the inside, but he was very successful on the outside here.
Is he a guy that is kind of a ball hawk that's going to kind of force pass breakups, force interceptions? Just what kind of style of corner is he?
He is definitely that. He led the team with 13 pass breakups, and it tied with 3 interceptions this year. Wherever that ball was, he was. And so, no, ball hawk is probably especially the best superlative for him. And that's probably what is getting all the NFL guys, scouts, executives' eyes too, is what he can do when that ball gets in the air down the field.
It seems to me, and you certainly know these two players better than me, it sounds like Nolan to me is the better NFL prospect, that if both of these players are on the board, Nolan to me sounds like the player I would take more of a chance on than Amos at 31.
Yeah, no, I think defensive line has just kind of recently had more success consistently. You know, you have those guys that are broken out in the secondary here and there, but I do feel like if you're staring at it and you had your pick and it was both of them on the board, I would definitely go, let's get Nolan, let's build up that defensive front first, and then if you had a chance to later get Amos, I'd get him. But yeah, Walter would be my first pick.
That is Jake Thompson joining us on the show today. He covers Ole Miss from On3 Sports, taking a closer look at a couple of their players. Walter Nolan has been mocked to the Chiefs. Also, Trey Amos, a very talented corner for the Rebels. Jake, great stuff, man. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate y'all. Have a good rest of the day. Thank you.
Absolutely. That's Jake Thompson joining us on the show today. He covers the Ole Miss Rebels. Trey Amos, to me, just doing my background and reading more about him, Rob, he just sounds like a second-round pick to me. And no shade at all towards Amos. Could end up being a very, very good player. I would be surprised if he ends up being a round one pick. He seems like a guy who is perfect for somewhere between 45 and 55. A team is going to take a good college player with length, versatility, who maybe doesn't project to be a cornerback one kind of type, but seems like a guy who has a chance to be a very productive starter, a number two type of corner. I don't think he's going to be a first-round pick.
I think he will go higher than this person went, but I think you'll understand the analogy. Remember when the Chiefs drafted Brandon Flowers? I remember thinking Brandon Flowers is a good corner at a good school in Virginia Tech, and he's going to be a good pro. I'd ever think, oh, that guy's going to be a superstar. That guy's Sauce Gardner. That guy's Deion Sanders. That guy's Darrell Revis. No, you never thought that about Brandon Flowers, but you knew in the right situation, he'll be just a good pro. That's kind of how I feel about Trey Amos. Like, if the Chiefs took him at 31, I wouldn't be angry about it. Bowl through the secondary. Let's go to work. You have upcoming contracts with McDuffie and Williams and Watson. Like, you know, build for the future. But it does feel like a guy who's going to go like 39 to the Patriots or something. And you're like, well, that guy's just going to be a good pro for the next 7 to 8 years.
Yeah, I don't think Amos is that high of a prospect, but I definitely get the analogy. Like, I would say that's kind of closer to the kid from Michigan that just, you and I both watched him in college. Like, that's an NFL corner, a really good prospect that I think a team's going to be able to get somewhere in the teens. I'm not sure if I look at this guy like that. I think McDuffie was kind of one of those players. Like, you look at how good he was in the Pac-12, you felt very good about that ability to translate to the next level, and obviously he did. Amos just feels like a prototypical second-round pick. So, obviously, happy that we had him on. But Nolan, to me, seems like the boom or bust. He's a big, talented, physical defensive tackle from the SEC. I can give you 10 examples of that guy working. I can give you 10 examples of that guy failing. It's about going to the right system, going to the right scheme, and staying healthy. He is the definition to me of a back half of the first round kind of selection. A guy that gets picked 28th overall. That guy, if he works, great, but there is usually a high bust rate, I would say, when it comes to those kinds of players. Coming up on the other side, I think we are learning a very valuable lesson so far in the NBA playoffs. I'll tell you what that is. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
This next topic is an NBA topic, but can be applied to all of the other sports. You know one thing that the NBA playoffs, I think, always reveals? When you got a chance to win a ring, you better win it. Because for most franchises in the NBA, and this applies in the NFL, this applies in baseball, this applies in all sports, you don't get nearly as many chances as you believe you are going to have. Sometimes you don't have the right mix. Sometimes a key player gets injured, and that is a big reason on why you don't win the championship. There's a lot of reasons on why teams fail. Sometimes it is their own doing. Sometimes sports just happen. But I'm looking at the Milwaukee Bucks, a team that won a championship a handful of years ago. They are not close to getting back. In fact, the Milwaukee Bucks have not won a playoff game since 2022. We're not talking about an NFL team that hasn't won a playoff game. We're talking about an NBA team. They have not won a playoff game since 2022. They make a trade to go get Damian Lillard. He hasn't been healthy. He missed game one. It's over. It's over for the Milwaukee Bucks. The Denver Nuggets. A couple of years ago, we were talking about Denver being a dynasty. Denver's about to lose their series to the Clippers. They're going to have to make a significant trade at the end of this season, in which they're going to have to either get rid of Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. Denver won their championship when the window was open. They won their ring. They broke through. Congratulations, Milwaukee. And now it feels like you got to do a massive shakeup to get back to that point, even though you have two of the five best players in the world on your team. Fans always think, oh, we got next year. Oh, we really got a 10-year window. No, you don't. Even in that 10-year window, you maybe have two or three really strong chances of winning the championship where everything aligns. Your best players playing at a high level. You got the right supporting cast around them. You got the right coaching. The rest of the league breaks the right way. The injury health. All of those things align yourself perfectly, and it becomes your year. I don't know if there's a sport that embodies that more than the NBA playoffs. Just watching Milwaukee yesterday, they went from being a championship-level team to they might get swept by the Indiana Pacers just overnight. I mean, they've tried everything. They change coaches. They make a trade to go get this guy. Like, it's not like they've sat on their hands the last couple of years. They're just not close anymore to winning a championship. I always say that your window is never open as long as you think it is. That's even more true in the NBA. I mean, you can go from 1 year, people think you're going to go back-to-back and you're the best team in the league. Next thing you know, you fire your head coach and you get eliminated in round one of the NBA playoffs. That's just how quickly things turn in the NBA. You can be in the NBA finals in June, and the next year you've traded your best player to the Los Angeles Lakers, and now you're talking about firing your general manager. It's like playing Monopoly. You can have all the money in the world. Next thing you know, one turn around the board, you done landed on three spaces, and now you got no property left, and you are one roll from going bankrupt. That's what it is like in the NBA. That's really what it's like in sports. Let me play this for you guys. And coming up at the top of the hour, it's time for us to talk about the Shannon Sharpe thing. It has gotten big enough. There's enough information out there. We will talk about Shannon Sharpe coming up at the top of the hour. I want to play for you guys what Todd McShay had to say about Shedeur Sanders. There has not been a positive story about Shedeur Sanders in maybe 2 months.
Quarterback is not going at three is from everything I can understand. So then Shedeur falls to nine. Everyone's saying for about a week, and I was saying it's not New Orleans. I don't think it's Shedeur New Orleans at nine, and I don't think it would be Shedeur to New Orleans at 40. Worst case, he goes 21 to Pittsburgh. I was told Sunday night when I landed here in L.A. by someone I trust that probably as much or more than anyone out there. That's a softer floor than people think. Maybe it's like, hold on these quarterbacks. I don't see the team out there, and no one I've talked to sees the team out there, that if Shedeur gets past 21, they're going to go racing in the first round to go get him.
This thing has turned very quickly for Shedeur. Very quickly. I think top 10 always felt like a little bit of a pipe dream for Shedeur. But now, honestly, at this point, it really comes down to what does Pittsburgh want to do? Is Pittsburgh waiting on Aaron Rodgers? Do they love Shedeur enough to take him? Do they love Jackson Dart in the first round? But we went from Shedeur maybe being a top 10 pick to now, I'm not sure if he's going to be the second quarterback that's taken. I think there's a chance that it's Jackson Dart. Like, if you want my what could be the biggest surprise in this, I think there's a chance that Jackson Dart goes nine to the New Orleans Saints. I wouldn't bet on it. I don't think that's going to happen. But if you were saying, what is the thing that would just shock and surprise you? I think the Saints might really, really like Jackson Dart. And maybe they don't want to run the risk of, well, we got to trade back up into the first round, but maybe this team takes them. Maybe they don't want to do it. No one feels like you overdrafted your quarterback if you get it right. If you get it wrong, sure, we bring it up. And usually people get fired when that happens. But if you take the quarterback that you want and he turns out to be good, you get applauded for the most part. And maybe that's how the Saints feel. So we've gone from where Shadur could maybe be a top 10 pick to now. I'm not sure if he gets drafted tomorrow night. I think he gets drafted tomorrow night, but it would not surprise me at all. This kind of feels like what happened with Johnny Manziel. Now, a team eventually took Johnny Manziel. But you remember, going into that night, we thought that there was a chance he was going to go in the top five. And in that scenario, Jacksonville took Blake Bortles in the top five. And then it started. And it was a tumble down the board. Eventually, a team drafted him in the 20s. But boy, it was a long night there for him. It feels like we are there. Maybe all of this is a smokescreen to throw us off. And Shadur is going to go number three overall to the Giants. And we will say, oh, man, we fell for it. But there has not been a positive story about Shadur in weeks. If anything, we are finding out how behind the scenes the league really feels about him, how they really feel about his personality, how they really feel about his arm strength. A lot of the anonymous quotes and things that have been attributed to him are not good. You remember when Mahomes was being drafted? How there was just such a buzz and a momentum, and you were thinking, hey, Mahomes might go a lot higher than people think that he is going to go. And there felt like there was a race to go get him, and the Chiefs were in it, and the Texans were in it, and the Saints were in it, and we were all trying to see who was going to win, and ultimately Kansas City won. It feels like the exact opposite is happening right now for Shadur. And heading into the draft, where is the buzz? Where is the hype? Where is the excitement? I don't see it. Maybe Pittsburgh grabs him at 21. Maybe this has been an elaborate smokescreen to throw us off the scent. That kind of happened to Teddy Bridgewater. You remember, there was a lot of negative Teddy Bridgewater. We don't like him. He eventually got drafted in round one. Maybe that is what happens. But it has been a very weird draft cycle for Colorado's quarterback. Coming up at the top of the hour, let's talk about one of the top stories in sports. Yes, let's talk about Shannon Sharpe. We'll do it next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.